Hi, I'm Carrie. I'm an alcoholic. I really want to thank you guys for having me here, your beautiful city and your beautiful country, and the amazing people that I've met thus far. You're going to have to bear with me tonight. I landed at 8 o'clock this morning, and I haven't slept since yesterday, which is my normal state when drinking, but not necessarily sober. But on the other hand, I do believe in the power of God, and I believe that when God says that I have to be somewhere, I need to show up and do the best that I can and leave the results in His hands. So it's really going to be in His hands tonight. Tomorrow, I don't know, but tonight, based on my own track record, I'm going to lie, manipulate, boast, you know, my usual. So let's let God do the job tonight. So I want to, before I start talking and lying, I'm going to stop and I'm going to say a prayer, because I find that when we come together, we're a spiritual body. All of us here are here in order to grow closer to God. And I grow closer to God by letting go what I think I know about myself and what I think I know about you, and asking God to show me what it is that I need to hear. So I'm going to ask God to please open our hearts and our minds tonight, to put the love in our hearts and the words in my mouth, and help us all to see the truth tonight. Amen. So, my sobriety date is September 6th, 1994. I'm 30 years old, let me get that out of the way. And I have 3 kids and I'm married. So I've had an interesting sobriety. God has graced me with so many gifts, so many things, so many people. I can't even begin to describe. But I mean, I'm here to tell you a little bit about who I am, how I got here, and what the power of God and AA has done for my life. You know, and I'm here to sell you something. I'm here to sell you my experience with the steps and tell you that I've had an experience with this program which has completely revolutionized the way that I look at and deal with things in my life. And by doing this and having this experience, I no longer believe that alcohol is the solution to any of my problems. And I'm free. And I'm going to sell you that, because that's my job. My job is here to come here and tell you my experience, so you can say to yourself, I was like her, and maybe I can have that experience that she had. You know, because the fact is that I'm not special. There's no virtue in what I do or who I am. The fact is that I'm a hopeless alcoholic. And I was lucky enough to meet somebody who showed me a solution to my problem. And that solution has done for me, and God has done for me, what I could not do for myself, period. And I'm lucky enough to know people who invited me here to tell you a little bit about how this happened in my life. It doesn't make me any more sober or spiritual than anybody else. It just makes me who I am and my experience what it is. And I get that out of the gate, because I don't like the cult of personality or the guru crap that I see that goes on sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't want you to put me there, because I am not on a pedestal. I am no different than anybody else, and I know nothing more about God and myself or the 12 steps than any other person in this room. It doesn't make me special. It just makes me a vessel of God. I'm here to be an agent of God in order to share my experience with you so that I can grow closer to God, and maybe you can too. Bottom line, that's why I'm here. And I get that out the gate, because I don't want this weekend, I don't want to start believing my own press clippings that I'm special, that I get flown to Denmark and therefore I know something, because I don't. What I know is that I'm an alcoholic, I'm hopeless, and that I need a power greater than myself in order for me to take a breath in the morning. Because based on my own track record, I will not do that. I will drink myself to death. That's been my experience. So let me tell you my experience. I grew up in a typical, you know, middle-class household in New Jersey. I'm a Jersey girl all the way. I mean, that's who I am. I mean, a housewife, soccer mom from Jersey. You know, this is who I am. And I grew up, and you know, you hear this in AA all the time. I know you guys hear this. You hear, I was different. There was something that just wasn't right about me. Somehow I didn't fit in. You know, somehow everybody else seemed to know something I didn't know. You know, and if you hear that long enough in Alcoholics Anonymous, you start to think, well, maybe that's the state of the alcoholic without alcohol. And that's my experience is that for some reason, I don't know how I got this way. I don't try to even posit any theories about this, but I did feel like there was something missing inside of me. You know, I walked through my life as a small child and I thought, you know, there's something wrong with me and I don't really know what it is. I was full of fear. I was terrified. I can remember being like 6 years old and being in my bed and swearing that my house was going to catch fire and how was I going to get out and save my family. And I didn't sleep, but I would just sit there with the blankets waiting for the fire to come, waiting for the disaster to come, waiting. You know, I lied at an early age. I would tell you anything, anything, anything that I thought you wanted me to tell you in order for you to love me. I don't know how I learned this. I don't know how I got this way. I just know that this is who I was. And I walked through my life desperate for love and acceptance and approval and doing anything or anything I could do to get it and absolutely terrified that the rug was going to get pulled out from me at any moment and I was going to be devastated. And I was like this from the very early, early, early in my life. I don't remember ever not being like this, you know. So you take a personality like that, and it's pretty difficult to stay in that state for any extended period of time. I mean, it's pretty much hell, you know. Living in my mind without God is it's a trip to hell. It absolutely is. I can be so trapped within self and so full of fear and so lost that I can remember going to church as a little girl, and I can remember, you know, sitting in the pew, and I remember praying about certain things that were going on in my life, and I remember praying and asking God to please, God, you know, please let these circumstances stop happening. God, please, you know, I'll do anything you say. I'll do anything. I'll be a nun. I'll never lie. I'll never disobey my parents. And, you know, I'd wake up the next morning and the circumstances of my life would be exactly the same. And I would think to myself, you know, God doesn't love me because he didn't give me what I thought I wanted for myself. My parents don't love me. Nobody loves me. I'm not good enough and I might as well die. So I did what any good self-respecting alcoholic did. I started to drink. You know, I picked up my first drink when I was 9 years old. I hit my first rehab by the time I was 13, and I was sober by the time I was 18. My story is not long. What it is very sad. And it's not sad in the sense that I have a terrible story. Everybody's got a terrible story. Everything that you had to do in order to get here to be in this room is everything that absolutely needed to happen in order for you to be here. And it has to be terrible because you have to surrender. And that's really, you know, what the last conversation, last talk was all about. So I'm not going to be redundant. But, you know, the fact is that for me to be willing to give up everything that I think that I know about myself and my life, and be willing to put that aside in order to find out what the heck is going on in AA, things have to be pretty darn bad. And it doesn't mean externally. Because for me, external conditions mean absolutely nothing. I could be the star of the show and still feel like crap. You know, my external life means absolutely nothing. It has absolutely no impact on my internal condition. My internal condition is directly connected to whether or not I'm willing to place my life and my will and myself into the care of a power greater than myself, period. And if I'm willing to do that, my internal life is wonderful despite my external circumstances. You know, so with that, you know, I picked up a drink and I had the experience that alcoholics have. Which is, I found that once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. You know, and we all know that, you know, the rational person would say, well, gee, if I have this experience and I can't stop drinking once I start, maybe I shouldn't drink. But see, there's this amazing thing that alcohol did for me what I could not do for myself. It relieved me of that absolute stark raving terror that I lived with in my life. The volume that was in my head every moment of every day got turned down just a little bit. And I was willing to do anything in order to have that experience again. Because it was that experience, that little bit of shift in the volume, in the craziness in my head, I was willing to sell my soul for it, and I did. My parents are very, very smart and wonderful people. They knew about alcoholism, they knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they didn't put up with a lot of crap from me. I didn't get to live in denial about my problem very long. What I did get to do is not care. You know, in the end of my drinking, if you asked me, you know, well, why do you do it? You know, why do you continue to drink? If you know that, you know, one more drink just means that you're going to be back in rehab, you're going to be back in jail, you're going to be back living on the streets, you're going to be back in hell, why would you do it? And I'd say, because I really don't give a crap. I don't care anymore. I just want to die. In the end, and I don't like, you know, it's been a long time since I've actually told my story, and mainly because I don't like to do that, because I believe that, and this is my experience, is that my story is my story, and it inspires people, and it inspires me, but your story is more inspirational to you than mine. Everything that happened to you in order for you to be in this room is everything that you needed to experience. And what I need to do is I need to present enough information about what happened to me and who I am so that you can compare your experience with mine and ask yourself, well, if Carrie had that wonderful miracle that she's saying happened to her, maybe that could happen to me. Or did I have that miracle? Or can I have it again? Because this is the amazing thing about this program is I can keep coming back for more. I can keep coming back for more spiritual experiences. It's not a one-shot deal for me. The question is, can I go broader? Can I go deeper? Can I go more? Can I accept? Can I open myself up to God more? Can I open my life up to God more? You know, in my experiences, that's true. So I don't like to go into the drunk log, and I won't, but I'm going to tell you that, you know, I have craving, and I explained it to you, that once I start drinking, I can't stop. I have a spiritual malady, and I explained that living in my head is an absolute terror and hell. The volume never gets turned down unless I'm drunk or unconscious. And basically, I would do anything or anything in order to not feel, period, to not be present. And if I could not be present, life would be wonderful. And I have this mind that tells me that alcohol is the solution to that. And I go back to it over and over again. And then I have a mind that tells me, once I know that alcohol is not the solution, that says, so what? So what? And so I'm going to skip ahead to the day that I died. And I'm like, I get to actually have that. Like, I actually died. I actually killed myself, and then it didn't work. And I told you, when I was a little girl, I used to go to church, and I would beg God, you know, like, I grew up in an alcoholic household, and I'd be like, please, you know, let my brother stop drinking. You know, please, God, you know, make my dad stop hitting us. You know, please, God, make my mom stop crying in the middle of the night. Please, God, make my family okay. And it didn't happen, and everybody continued to do what they were doing, and then I started drinking, and I started doing it too. And I stopped believing in God. I stopped believing in anything, and I stopped caring. And then when I was 16 years old, in one of my multiple suicide attempts, I ate all the medicine in the medicine cabinet, and I died. And then I woke up 3 days later in the intensive care unit, with intubated, and I realized that God didn't even want me either. And I thought about it. It's like, you know, I can't even die. I can't live. I can't drink. I can't do anything. I can't be in my own skin. I can't look in the mirror. I can't function, and I can't even die. And I continue to drink, because the fact is that the threat of death doesn't scare me. There's nothing that's going to deter me from picking up a drink. Nothing. Fear doesn't sober me up. Control, self-control, you know, relationships, changing circumstances in my life, geographical cures. I could be sent to, you know, my parents sent me to live out into the country with my sister in the woods, you know. I live right outside of New York, and I got sent to, like, you know, the boonies, you know, a couple hours away in the woods, and, you know, basically you have to walk like an hour in order to get to the liquor store, and I managed to find ways to drink. I mean, the fact is that you can't remove an alcoholic from alcohol. You can't do it. You know, I didn't get done with alcohol. Alcohol got done with me. And, you know, I thought that I could check out, and I couldn't do that either. So I woke up in the intensive care unit, rejected by God, can't drink, can't function, and what do? So I said to God, you know, if you don't want me, I don't want you. You didn't help me anyway. I had a terrible life. I'm a 16-year-old alcoholic. Like, I can't even freaking die. You know what? Screw you. Screw you. I'm not playing with you anymore. You're not my friend. And I didn't. And I didn't care. And between the ages of 16 and 18, I tried to die on a daily basis. And I just didn't care. And one day, after having lost everything and been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for many years, and I can't get it, and I can't figure out why, and this thing doesn't work for me. And you know, I used to go to NA, and they used to have this saying in the beginning of the meeting used to say that if you have drugs or paraphernalia on you, you should leave it outside the door. And every time they did that, I'd wait about 5 minutes and go outside and smoke and start kicking the bushes to see if, you know, somebody actually did that. You know. You know, to me, coming to these fellowships was a complete joke. I mean, you guys talked about God. God didn't want me. God threw me out. God said, you know, the devil didn't want me. God didn't want me. I couldn't die, couldn't drink. And you guys came to this fellowship, and you guys are, God's the answer to your problems. And I'm like, God is my problem. You know, God gave me this life. He gave me this disease, and now I'm trapped here. Screw that. You know, so I came to AA, and I came to the fellowships, and my full intention was to exploit this program for everything that it was worth, because you guys were stooges. You know, you'd give me money if I asked you for it, give me rides. I mean, I used to con people. I used to go to meetings and get rides to go, you know, buy booze and cop drugs. You know, I would just, you know, say, you know, yeah, you know, I got to go do homework with somebody. Can you give me a ride to, like, you know, the middle of the ghetto, you know, I'll only be 5 minutes, you know, and so I looked at Alcoholics Anonymous as a place where I could get over, not a place where I can get sober. And I didn't think that it would work for me. So I used it up for what I could. And when I was done, I left. And I was 17 years old, and I completely gave up on any concept or any possibility of being sober. And I intended to drink myself to death. And I tried, you know, and I did that. I went out to drink one night, and I drank for 4 months, and I couldn't stop. And I remember waking up in someone's basement, because at this point I was homeless, I was living on the streets, and I was doing absolutely anything or anything I could do in order to get money or have a place to sleep. And I had become everything that I had hated in my life. And I couldn't look at myself. And I had one set of clothes, and I smelled, and I don't remember the last time I had brushed my teeth or my hair. And I remember crawling out of this basement, and I was covered in my own piss. And I remember just thinking, you know, I don't know what to do. Where do I go? And something in the back of my head, and now I know it to be God, said, you know, those people in AA weren't all that bad. And at least they care about you. You know, maybe you should go back. And I remember walking about 2 hours to the AA meeting, you know, because, you know, I didn't have any money because I had spent it all the night before. And I was still covered in my own piss. It's not like I changed my clothes or anything. So, you know, I walk into this AA meeting, and there's a bunch of old guys. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was a big book meeting. And I walked in, and I said, you know, I'm coming back. And they all looked at me, and I was just, you know, covered in bodily fluids and disgusting. And I got a hug from this little old man, and I thought to myself, I'm like, you know, I'm disgusting. I stink. And this man gave me a hug. And I was like, well, if I'm going to die someplace, I might as well die here. You know? So I stayed around for a little bit. You know, I did eventually change my clothes. And my first couple meetings back, I mean, I was vomiting in the bathroom, and people would, you know, because I was detoxing. I didn't have any money. I didn't have detox. You know, my parents had thrown me out. Nobody would speak to me. You know, I had nowhere to go. I was still, you know, homeless. And people took me in. And I was detoxing, and I was throwing up, and I was a mess. And, like, just the nasty stuff that I had been doing was pouring out of my pores. And, I mean, it was just horrible. And these people took care of me. You know, they gave me a place to stay. You know, they held my hair while I threw up in the bathroom at the meeting. You know, and I remember thinking, you know, like, don't they know how disgusting I am? Don't they know all the things I had to do in order to get here? How broken I am. How can they love me? I'm broken. And they did. And I... I don't know how it happened. I don't know why I didn't drink. All I know is that I just kept coming back, and I didn't drink, and slowly things started to change. Like, I started to believe there might be a possibility that I might be able to have some kind of a life, because these people were sharing with me all the things that had happened to them, the same things that I had done, you know, robbing and stealing and prostituting themselves and, you know, doing things, and, you know, they had done those things and they were happy, you know. And I started to think that maybe, just maybe, it might work for me. The problem was, is, you know, where I got sober, people didn't necessarily work the steps. You know, they went to about 3 meetings a day. They made coffee. You know, they dated a lot. You know, they did 90 dances in 90 days. And you take somebody like me, with the amount of psychic and spiritual pain that I walked into the rooms with, as broken as I was, I couldn't stay without a drink or God. Like, I couldn't stay in that limbo. That limbo is the most excruciating thing for me. You know, so I was able to stay around for a little while, and I started to think about, you know, drinking again. And a miracle happened. I found out that I was pregnant. And the big question was, did I get pregnant before or after I stopped drinking? Turned out after. Thank God. But, you know, I ended up getting pregnant, and God did for me exactly what I could not do for myself, because I didn't have a higher power. But He gave me a higher power. He gave me a reason to live. And He gave me a reason to live long enough till I found somebody to help me with the steps and to show me what this program is, to get me to God so that I could really live. And, you know, I had my daughter when I was 10 months sober. And a year later, I was sitting in a meeting in Staten Island, and somebody was talking about the Big Book. And in fact, it was a guy named Joe Hawk. He was talking about the ninth step. And there's this guy, he looks like Captain Kangaroo. You know, he's this weird looking guy with the handlebar mustaches. Like, if you put, like, you know, David Crosby and Captain Kangaroo together and smushed them, it would be like Joe Hawk. And so here's this guy, you know, sitting there talking about the ninth step, talking about amends. And I'm thinking, you know, who the hell is he? Like, where is he, you know, where is he from? California? What the hell is this? This is Staten Island, you know, what are you doing here? And, you know, and, like, I didn't know who he was. Like, I didn't know what he did. I didn't know he did these conferences and stuff. In fact, it was right before he took off to go stay with the Dalai Lama. And I remember thinking, like, who the hell is this guy? Why is everybody, like, you know, genuflecting and kneeling and, you know, oh, Joe. And I'm like, you know, it's an old man. You know, I'm 19 at the time. I'm like, who the hell is this guy? And he started to talk. And he was talking about amends and freedom, and it was a freedom that I don't have, or I didn't have at that time. It was something I didn't understand at all. And he was talking about it, and he said it with such conviction. He talked about having this freedom with such conviction, you know, that I remember going up to him afterwards, and I'm like, well, you know, what did you do? You know? And he kind of laughed at me, and he was like, you know that book, you know that coaster that you've been using, the thing that you used to prop open your window, you might want to read it. I had no idea that the 12 steps of the program of recovery was found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought that the program of recovery was sitting in, you know, step meetings and talking about my problems and the topic of the day, talking about steps that I never worked, things that I didn't even understand. You know, that's what I thought recovery was, and that recovery wasn't doing it for me. It just wasn't cutting the mustard. Shortly thereafter, I started to work with one of his sponsees, and they really helped me. They sat down, they went through the Big Book, sentence by sentence, page by page, paragraph by paragraph, and my life began to change, and I experienced an incredible miracle. I didn't hate myself. I didn't hate myself. You know, and that sounds like a very simple thing, but for somebody like me, it was absolute freedom to not hate myself for 5 minutes. You know, and then that 5 minutes became 10 minutes. And the 10 minutes became 20 minutes. And then I would go a whole week where I didn't hate myself. And that's a beautiful thing. You know, because I'm one of these people that my spiritual sickness turns into absolute self-loathing and hatred, which then I take out on you. You know, so my insanity is that I hate myself, so I begin to hate you even more, you know, because you make me this way. But what I like to talk about, and now that we got that out of the way, what I like to talk about is about how I had this incredible experience, and it changed my life. And here I was, this kid who couldn't even die, was rejected by God in her mind, who began to have an experience with God. And then a couple of years later, you know, I began to run the show again. I began to think that I was in charge. I began to think I ran my life. I began to think that I made decisions for myself, you know, because I began to think that I was the Alpha and the Omega. You know, I slowly but surely, my ego eased God out, and all of a sudden I became God again, and I wondered why I wasn't happy in my life. You know, and the fact is, and this is for me, you know, we talk about this all the time. We say alcohol is not my problem. For me, lack of power is my dilemma. That I have to find a power by which I can live, and it has to be a power greater than myself. I made so many things in my life my higher power. I made men my higher power. I made how people saw me my higher power. I made achievement my higher power. I made failure my higher power. I turned everything or anything into a human power or a higher power, and I used it in order to distract myself from the fact that I was completely empty and devoid of spirit. And I ran around chasing my tail, and I thought that I was chasing God. You ever experienced that? You know, when you know you can't drink, you know that there's a better way, and you're so trapped within yourself, you just can't get there. And it's how do you bridge that gap? How do you get through that? You know, and for me, it was hitting a spiritual bottom in recovery. It was losing it all after I had gotten what I thought I wanted for myself. It was recognizing and seeing that my life was run on self-will. See, I didn't realize, but I had turned the program in recovery. I had twisted it into something that it wasn't supposed to be. I lost the entire spiritual intent of this program. You know, I did the work. I wrote inventory. I made amends. I did all these things, and it looked like I was doing the work, but what I was really doing is doing the work to not do the work. I really wasn't honest with myself. I would tell you 95% of how I really felt, but I would keep that 5%, because it was that 5% that made me look bad. It was that 5% that was real. And it would sound to you like I was being really honest. I would tell you how selfish and dishonest I was, you know. But it was always about holding back just enough so that I would never really be free. You know, so I had gotten free. I had gotten free from alcohol, but I hadn't gotten free from myself. And I was beating myself back. And I was slowly but surely easing my way out of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was 5 years sober, and I was as miserable as I was before I had gone through the steps in the first place. And I didn't realize that going through the steps the first time was just, for me, a dress rehearsal, and that I needed to continue to go back through the steps and constantly reevaluate my spiritual life, constantly go back to God, constantly say, God, what else is blocking me off from you? Because the fact is that, and I'm sure you've heard this, is that often I'm asleep dreaming that I'm awake. You know, I don't know if you guys, of course you guys have heard of it, but The Matrix, you know, this movie. You ever, like, I remember watching it and thinking, oh my God, you know, that is me. Is honestly, you know, I go through my life and I think I'm okay until I'm not. And I'm like, how the hell did I get here? You know, and that's been my experience, is that, you know, I need, and this is just for me, I need to keep close to God. I need to constantly renew my connection with God, because what happens to me is that I slowly become disconnected from God, and then I'm my own higher power, and you all suck, and I'm going to go drink. And I can't afford that luxury. You know, because I am powerless over alcohol, I'm powerless over you, and I'm powerless over my spiritual condition. I recently went through the work, or the steps. I hate using the words the work, because the steps are not work. They're a beautiful process, and they're often painful and difficult, but they are incredibly wonderful. But I use the work because it's a lazy habit. But I went through the steps just recently, in the, about a year and a half ago. And I went through a really intense process with it, and it was interesting. You know, I was 10 years sober, and I wasn't allowed to share in meetings. I had to shut my mouth like a newcomer. I had to learn to be humble once again after I thought that I knew something. And I'll tell you what, it was probably the greatest experience with the process of recovery in my life. You know, it was real interesting to sit in a discussion meeting where everybody's talking about their problems. And, of course, I know the answer to your problems. But my sponsor politely pointed out if I knew the answer to their problems, you know, if I know the answer to everybody else's problems, why is it that I'm miserable in my life? you know, and she's absolutely correct. So I had to learn to sit quiet and go within. And it was an absolutely beautiful experience, you know, and I tell you what, I found out that I had a lot of attachments and a lot of beliefs about who I was. And the reason why, like, I didn't talk too much about drinking or any of those things is because I'd rather talk to you about what I'm doing now. You know, if you want to hear about my story, you can download it. I'm sure it's around. But I want to tell you about what I'm doing now, what my current experience is, because I think that what I'm doing now is absolutely wonderful and has changed my life. I've experienced a level of accountability in my spiritual life that has changed me to such a degree that it's actually hard to verbalize. I'll tell you one of the things that I do. Well, you know, I went through this process and I wasn't allowed to share or speak at a meeting until I had completed all my amends. And then my sponsor had me do some things in meditation. I had to, you know, do an inventory, and I had to go back, and I had to make all these amends. And one of the things that my sponsor had me do is make amends to all the people that I judged. You know, all the people that I had judgment against, I was to go back and not say, look, I thought you were a complete jerk, but to go back to them and say, you know what, I wasn't the friend, employee, sister, wife, whatever that I should have been. That I was not kind or loving to you, and what can I do to set that right? So these people didn't even know that I had harmed them. It was everything that I had done in my head, because I had gotten so sick in my head, I behaved well and thought horribly. I was a girl with a curl in the middle of her forehead, and when I was good, I was oh so good, and when I was bad, I was hard. You know, and I had to go back to these people. My sponsor instructed me to go back to these people and to make amends to them. And I got to tell you what, it was incredibly humbling and incredibly freeing. I mean, a lot of people were like, so what? You know, and a lot of people were like, I didn't really care what you thought of me. And that was nice. And a lot of people were like, you know, thank you for, you know, I knew that you would look at me and there was something funny about the way that you looked at me and I didn't understand it and I thought I had done something wrong. You know, and I was able to, you know, to set right those harms, because I'm harming people all the time and I don't even know it because I'm blind to the fact that I'm a selfish, self-centered jerk and I think that I'm okay. And I say and do things that hurt people all the time. And it's my job in my life to continue to go back to you and to God and say, hey, what did I do to harm you? You know, have I hurt your feelings lately? And when was the last time you asked somebody that you lived with, your husband or your wife, have I done something to harm you recently? My husband and I try to do this on a regular basis. I ask my kids on a regular basis. I say, you know, my daughter's 11 years old, and she's got some answers for me. But I go back to my daughter, and I say to her, I said, you know, how am I doing, Dad? What kind of mom am I? Are you approve of my job, of the job that I'm doing? What could I do differently? What would you like me to do? And I get some great answers. Because, you know, one of the things that I try very hard to bring into my prayer meditation and my spiritual life is to stop fighting for my right to be right. You know, I learned through this process, and excuse my language, but I'm an ass and you're an ass. And there's no difference between you and me except for the fact that I'm me and you are you. That we're all children of God and no one's right and no one's wrong. That everybody's entitled to their own version of the truth. And when I really accepted that in my heart, when I really accepted that as part of my spiritual life, as part of my spiritual axiom, then I can ask people, instead of deciding what would be better for, what I could do better for them so that I could better be of service to them, I began to ask people in my life, what can I do to be of service to you? How can I be a better friend to you? How can I be a better mom? How could I be a better wife? How do I treat you? Because for so long I was so afraid of being wrong. So afraid of looking bad or having you tell me the truth about what you thought that I was, that I didn't ask. I just hunkered down and prayed that I didn't piss you off so much that you'd leave. You know? And of course, if I live like that, that means I don't have a higher power. You're my higher power. I make you my God because I make what you think of me more important than what God thinks of me. You know? So I began to learn to do that, to ask people, to check in, not just decide what it is that I'm doing, but ask people what I'm doing, to get a report card. And I get some great feedback. Sometimes I don't like it. Sometimes I have to bite my tongue. And other times I'm like, you know what? You are absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I'm going to do better with that. So that's one of the interesting things that I've been doing with this process that I'm doing lately. One of the other things, and this is a little controversial, and when I talk about it, some people like to fight with me. I do something, and it's called, have you guys ever heard of something called the 10-step buddy? 10-step buddy? Yeah. Oh, you guys do. See, and you see this in the USA, and they're like, oh, no, I can't do that. So I have this thing. It's like whenever I'm disturbed, whenever I'm blocked by fear, whenever I'm caught up in myself, you know, obviously, you know, I get that feeling in my gut, and I just know. I know that I'm not connected to God. And I say, okay, well, what's going on? Where am I being selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid? You know, and then I pick up the phone and I call one of my 10-step buddies, and I have a handful of them, and I say, look, hey, so-and-so is not behaving the way I want them to. I'm selfish. Oh, I'm not even allowed to tell them what it is that that person's doing. You know, so I can't call them up and be like, you know, my husband, he said this, he said I was fat. You know, I'm not allowed to do that. So I call them up and I say, so-and-so is not behaving the way I want them to. I'm being selfish because I expect them to behave the way I want them to, and I'm making demands. I'm delusional that I have any right to make any demands on anybody. I'm in fear because maybe I'm not getting what I think that I want. I ask God to remove it. I'm sharing it with you. What can I do to be of service to you today? And I tell you what, poof, it's gone. You know, I used to try to think my way through my own resentment, my own selfishness, my own fear. And what I found out, and what my big book tells me, is I'm as powerless over those things as I am over alcohol. So if I try to think my way through it, all I'm doing is bringing the same sick mind to that sort of, to those things, and I'm just compounding it, rationalizing it, justifying it, and making it worse. So what I found was that that if I was humble and I opened myself up to you, that I would find freedom there. Because it's been my experience that the humility and the following direction from another human being, and doing what they ask me to do without question, and following directions, that there's virtue in those things. That it's not that, you know, my sponsor dictates things and I just do what they say blindly, but I trust that she knows what's best for me, just as I trust God knows what's best for me. You know, I placed my life in God's hands, and God made my sponsor and the people in my network and the people in my life, they're agents of God. And the things that they have to say to me, the things that they have to give to me, I need to stop and take a look at and not fight with them so much and try to defend my position. You know, and to open up and listen to what they have to say. You know, and for so long, I used the big book to justify and rationalize my position all the time. Instead of being open to what these people and the people in my life, non-alcoholics, alcoholics, my sponsees with 30 days, my sponsees with 25 years, have to tell me about who they think that I am. You know, and not make that my definition of myself, but ask myself, is that true? And, you know, and what I found out was that I'm not as good as I think I am, and I'm not as bad as I think that I am, but what I did find was freedom. You know, what I did find was freedom, and I found that my emotions don't dictate my reality anymore. I live my entire life based on trying to live up to what I thought you wanted from me. And when I failed, or when I thought that I failed, I was devastated, and I had nothing. I had no sense of self, and I was no one, and I had nowhere to go. And what I found out was that my emotions are not my reality, that I can feel any way that I want to feel, and I can, by the grace of God, put one foot in front of the other and do what's expected of me. And you know what? I can be free in the midst of being unhappy. That the external circumstances of my life don't have to dictate my internal reality. And that for me is a beautiful thing, because I lived my whole life being tossed one way or another based on what you did and where I was. You know? To tell you the truth, I came up here and I wanted to, you know, to wow you with a great story. And I asked God to tell me what it is that I needed to say to you guys. That instead of doing this or coming up here talking to make myself look good or impress you or make you think that I'm special or unique or cool, you know, I decided that I was just going to speak and say what God had me say, and then I was going to stop when God said that I was done. And to be honest with you, I'm done. I am. I mean, I can continue. I could tell you some funny stories, some drunk logs, but it wouldn't be honest and it wouldn't be true, and it's not why you invited me here. You know, and what I hope that is, if I can give you a little bit of an idea of what my life is like today, and I gave you an idea of what my life was like before, and I tell you that despite being incredibly spiritually sick, I'm incredibly free. You know, can you imagine that dichotomy? That I'm an alcoholic, I have a progressive spiritual illness that has been growing for almost 13 years, yet I'm happy and content in my life. I have no money. I drive a Kia. I haven't even graduated college yet. I went back to school at 25. You know, none of the external things that people look to or I'm told by my society that I need to have or to do in order to be happy, I have none of those things yet. I have everything that I've ever wanted in my life. I have the love of my family, the love of my children, a wonderful husband, and I've been able to, through the grace of God, set right so many of the harms that I caused because of my drinking. You know, and I've been able to become the woman, the daughter, the wife, the mother, the friend that I never was. You know, and, you know, I'm going to have an opportunity over this weekend to, share with you exactly what I did in order to get there. See, tonight was the teaser. It was to tell you, look, this is the state of my life. This was the state of my life. So the real question here is, what did I do? How did I go from point A to point B? And I hope that over this weekend I get to share with you a little bit of that experience. I hope that you can take home something from what I've said. You know, it's not polished. It's not a pat story. It's not a pat talk. I don't do that. I come up here and I say whatever it is that comes to my heart, comes out of me. I sort of throw up and I hope that you guys can take something home from it. You know, I'm not funny and I don't try to be, although sometimes happens. You know, I'm not here to entertain you. What I am here to do, and I hope that I can fulfill that requirement this weekend or that goal, is that somehow God can use me so that you can go grow closer to Him. Because that's really what I want, and that's really why I came here. And I hope through this process I can grow a little closer to my higher power and let go a little bit more of self and fear so that I can become a little bit more integrated with the higher power that I have found deep down within me. I really want to thank you for having me, and I hope that you have a wonderful, safe evening, and I hope to see you tomorrow.